Greetings, growers of the world. Travel update really quickly. Growcast will be in Sacramento in just a few short weeks. We are doing a Sacramento weed up. That's a meetup with weed. Saturday, the 31st of July. That's just in a few short weeks upon hearing this. Yeah, it's about 3 weeks. Yeah, 3 weeks and a day away from this episode dropping. We are going to be up in Sacramento hanging out. Come and visit. I've got prizes. We'll be trading all sorts of good stuff. Just hanging out, talking cultivation. It's a Growcast meetup. If you'd like to get in on it, you need to RSVP. Go to growcastpodcast.com/Sacramento and RSVP, and we'll get you the details for the meetup. Very, very cool. Thank you to the Growcast members and the Growcast listeners, the Growcast universe, for turning out. These are turning into really fun meetups. growcastpodcast.com/Sacramento. Today we have Leighton Morrison on the line. Leighton is the shit. He's a wonderful fountain of knowledge when it comes to cultivation, aquaponics, living soil, you name it. And you're just going to love today's episode. Before we jump in, shout out to AC Infinity. That's right. Code GROWCAST15, GROWCAST15 will save you 15% at acinfinity.com on their world-leading ventilation. Their fans are the only thing that I would recommend at this point. Their sexy, thick tents that are in stock while they last, you know. And they've also got fabric pots and trimming scissors, tons of great cultivation equipment. acinfinity.com, use code GROWCAST15 and send us a snapshot of you using our code. Email contact@growcastpodcast.com. And you send us a snapshot there and you're entered to win free seeds. That's right. AC Infinity, baby. Ventilation leaders. Also making tents, pots, scissors, and more. Code GROWCAST15. All right, let's get into it with Leighton. Thank you for listening, everyone, and enjoy the show. Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to Growcast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Before we get started, as always, I urge you to spread the show. Tell a grower about Growcast. We're on Spotify. Everybody's got Spotify. Make sure you subscribe. Give us a good rating and review, if you would, please. It helps us out. Today, we have return guest from Kingdom Aquaponics and the Future Cannabis Project. You see him all over the place. We have Leighton Morrison. What's up, Leighton?
How are you, Jordan? Another beautiful day in paradise.
Oh, man, I love it. What's going on in your world, man? It's been a while since we spoke to you. I spoke to you on my coffee show not too long ago. But what's been going on in your world? What are you up to?
I'm on an interesting project right now. I got called in to spray compost extract on an orchard that had been neglected for 5 years, and the trees had been in serious decline for 3 years. Mm. So I rolled out there, took a look. I met with the ranch manager as well as the landscape architect in charge of this restoration. And I basically said to them, you're wasting your money having me apply anything to these trees at this point in time. And Luis was like, Luis is the ranch manager, was like, well, why? And I'm like, well, let's go over to one of the trees. So I went over to one of the trees and I started raking back the soil with a little trowel. Uh-huh. And I said, see how deep these roots are? These are surface roots. This tree has been, you know, overplanted, dug too deep, or the soil has built up over the top of it over time. Huh. But you need to do, you know, you need to excavate the base of the tree and expose the, what's called the crown of the root ball. And I go, then you need to put organic matter down. You got to get rid of these sprinkle irrigation out here. I mean, you're losing 50% of the moisture to the atmosphere because it's so dry out here.
Huh.
And we need to get, you know, some compost and some drip rings and some chips over the top of it to hold the compost from blowing away. And I go, then I can come in and apply compost tea or extract to this, you know, to the trees. So the architect said, okay, when can you start?
Damn. That's wild,
God,
man.
Boy.
Yeah, you take on some really interesting large scale projects, man. I want to talk all about this and your work in compost and everything here. But really quickly, why don't we shout you out? Where can people find you on Instagram, just so we can give you a plug here in the beginning? And then, like I said, you're involved with the Future Cannabis Project as well, right? Did I get that correct?
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, we do a weekly show on Thursdays, and I do specialty shows once in a while with them. I've data dumped a bunch of presentations that I've done, and there'll be more coming. seems to be a great house. I love Peter. We've known each other and been working together for probably 5 years now, I believe. So it's, you know, it's a pleasure to be on his platform, and I think he enjoys the company and getting tuned in all over the world, my friend. It's
That's
crazy.
So cool, man. I mean, from what I've caught from the show, it's really high level stuff, really, really cool, comprehensive and succinct what you guys are doing. So check that out. And then Kingdom Aquaponics LLC on Instagram.
Yep. You got it.
I got my stuff. I got it here. Got my ducks in a row. Okay. So talk to me more about this orchard restoration. What's going on? And then you were talking to me off air about your work with compost and trying to enhance that compost application that I assume you were just alluding to.
Yeah. So, you know, the way I start projects like this is the first thing I do is I do soil tests. You have to look at soil as three components. First, it's the physical, which is the sand, silt, clay, and organic matter, and their relationship, which is very important. Second of all, it's soil chemistry. And third is soil biology. And if you're not taking into consideration all three pieces, you're missing one third of the puzzle. So you're never going to solve it.
Hmm.
So the first thing I did was soil chemistry test. When it came back, I was low on trace minerals. I needed to adjust the sulfur. That was it for the avocados. The lemons were more complicated. They needed trace minerals, gypsum, and K-Mag. No, it wasn't Cal-Mag. It was, it'll come to me. Anyway, so back to the avocados. So right away, I was like, all right, let's dig everything back. Let's get the chemistry in balance. So we applied the sulfur and the trace. And then we essentially brought in three different kinds of compost. One was yard waste. One was a really old horse manure blend with yard waste.
Mm-hmm.
And one was just basically a carbon source. So it was shredded wood products. And then I had the guys rake all of the leaves, any sticks, twigs, trimmings, had all the trees pruned. And brought all that to a soil blender and had it grind it up and ship it back to us. And then we blended those four components together. And that was our compost. Now, the thing that people don't really take into consideration is just how valuable that kind of material is, because that plant took that up out of the soil. And now by putting it back in play around the ring of the tree, I'm basically feeding it exactly what it wants.
So I would love for you to drill down on why you chose those specific inputs for your compost, because that's one of the things that's confused me about compost is it contains nutritional value, but if you're composting at home or whatever, it's just kind of whatever you're putting into it. So why did you choose the manure, wood, and what was the other one you said? Forgive me.
All right. So it was yard waste.
Yard waste.
Is basically greens, grasses.
So why'd you choose those specifically?
Well, because they all have a variation of uptake in minerals.
Okay.
And again, feeding plants, it's a lot easier for them to break it down and take it up.
Sure, I hear that.
So instead of having them mine the minerals, they use a tremendous amount of their energy currency in leaking out exudates, growing out the biology or bacteria, having the bacteria mine it, release it back to the plant, uptake it, and then have the food source where they need it.
Sure.
So most of that can be taken away when you have something like an organic matter that's very easy to break down. And there were two other pieces that I added into this four-part compost blend, which was pit moss.
Oh, nice.
And coir.
Okay.
The coir came from a place out here on the West Coast. The gentleman makes it down in Mexico. It's not the coconuts are not grown in brackish water, so you don't have a salt issue. He does not compress it to 10 pounds per square foot, which is what the Asian companies do because they have to truck it or ship it all the way over here.
Sure.
And what that does is that breaks the integrity of the coir to hold moisture. And so, you know, you've broken the integrity, you've got salts, you've got all kinds of other contaminants in it. So this guy does it right. So I took those components and blended those with the compost. So it's really a 6-part material that we used. And then we applied that about 2.5 inches over the exposed roots and the crown of the root ball, put on drip irrigation, and then covered it with chips. And then I came in and inoculated it with a compost that I made here. It's basically a biological compost. That's a whole nother drill down that we'll probably need to do in the future on how to make this stuff so that it's really biologically active.
Man.
And then I blended it in with a real mycorrhizae product, not one of these ones that, you know, I've tested over 15 now, and I've only found three that are viable. And that's pretty scary.
Oh, can you please share with us?
Well, I will get sued, but I'll tell you the one that I like.
Sure.
I'll tell you the one I use.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I'll give you the company name, and you'll be able to go now, direct to them.
Now, this is a brand in the grow world, or is this some, I'm sure this isn't some grow brand, is it?
No, it's not a grow brand.
I knew it.
It's produced in Spain, right, in vivo, so in nature.
Oh, sure.
So it's grown with grasses, so you're not only getting the spores, but you're getting root fragments. And these are called propagules. So a lot of companies will say, oh, we have X amount of propagules per unigram, and they'll count hyphae. Now, there is no proven data anywhere that mycorrhizae hyphae have enough energy to make an association with a plant.
Oh, wow.
So without enough energy to associate with the root, what is the viability of that propagule? Nothing. So that's where it gets a little crazy as far as what people's claims are versus what the product actually ends up to be. Let me see here.
Fascinating, man. Yeah, if you get that brand name, that would be interesting. Because I thought you were going to say like some one of the grow brands, but then I realized that you're not going to the hydro store. You're contacting somebody like...
I'm so blessed. I've been working with the top people all over, you know, this biological, you know, industry. So that's why I'm connected with people that have real products.
Right.
So this is called Bioratus Sol. And the guy that you want to speak to is at Symbio Soils. That's SymbioSoils at gmail.com.
Oh, there you go, everybody.
Hit up Sebastian. Please tell him I recommended him so he knows that he's getting the love that I've been promising him. And that product works. I mean, and generally speaking, just so the audience knows, whenever I get involved with a product, like this project, I bought 16 bottles or 20 bottles, I can't remember. And so there were two different batches. So each batch, I sent samples from two of the bottles so that I get my propagule counts. And with the propagule counts, now I can decide how to dilute the product. Because you don't want to overuse it and you don't want to underuse it. So it's really important that you understand what you're getting. And if you're buying on scale, test it. If you're just buying a bottle, you know, you don't have to test it. I can tell you that it's going to have more propagules than they claim on the label. And that's all you really need to know. And you probably need, you know, about 250 propagules per plant. And if you know you've got 1,000 propagules per gram, pretty easy to weigh that out to quarter grams and put 1/4 gram on each plant.
Oof, okay. I think I follow you there. Does it not matter the size that you're growing the plants, or is it just per plant?
Well, I'm talking about like cannabis seedlings.
Okay. Okay.
If you know, it's unless you have a no-till bed that you keep continuing to use, don't bother with mycorrhizae. It takes 90 days for the complete association. That means the infection from the root all the way to where the mycorrhizae is beginning to mine materials or associating with another mycorrhizae or another plant. So by the time it starts to work, you're cutting the plant down. So if you're in raised beds that you don't change or till, then use it. If you're in pots and you recycle your soil, don't bother.
Wow. What if you reuse your soil, but like you said, it gets tilled, still destroys it completely?
Yeah, it destroys the whole network.
Wow.
So very, very beyond recovery. Network.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Because remember, there's no viability that hyphae is going to have any kind of association with anything ever again.
That's nuts, man.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, you know, when I first heard these guys, you know, when I did my first regen conference and heard these guys, you know, talking about mycorrhizae, I'm like, well, you guys are using salts. Why would you even bother with the mycorrhizae? Or you're dumping your pot after each season. Why? You're wasting your money, man.
Well, now, 90 days, if they're inoculated from a seedling, but again, that's not how it's being kind of presented. That's crazy, man. I feel like I see good results after a transplant with the mycorrhiza fungi. Why is that? Is that just my mind playing tricks on me?
Well, it could probably, it's probably your other practices. Now, again, if you have a bed that you don't till and you leave the root balls in place,
right,
and then you plant next to them and you have inoculated your seedling or your seed, now it's going to plug into that network in like 24 hours.
Whoa.
Like, bam, now it's just up and running. So that's why I preach, you know, the horizontal soil system and no-till raised beds over pots, because you can build this incredible soil food web ecosystem in your bed that you can't do in a pot. And you can't do if you don't have sand, silt, and clay.
Man,
you know,
that's
the other
insane
component that's, yeah, that's never used in cannabis production, which in my mind is crazy. And ever since I did that podcast on Shaping Fire, I've been getting a lot of people responding back, thanking me and telling me how great this system works. So I did another one on Future Cannabis Project, which we actually filmed so people could actually see the process. So, you know, I highly recommend if this is a direction you're going into, that you listen to the podcast or watch the video and you go there, because it, this helps with water management. It provides all of the different components of soil that the soil food web needs. If you don't have clay, you're losing fertility. You don't have silt, you're losing fertility.
Jeez, man.
And the sand, you're losing drainage and fertility, because if you have mycorrhizae, they will mine that sand for nutrients.
Okay, we need to get into some questions that have been submitted, and a lot of them go along with what you just said, so I'm going to fire them at you.
Yeah.
We'll be right back with Leighton, but before that, I got to remind you guys, we got some swag packs left over. We found a secret box in the back room. That's right, in the back of the wolf den. And we have some more swag packs available. If you haven't seen them, go to growcastpodcast.com/swagpack and see the incredible Growcast custom grinder, rolling tray, and jar. The grinder is the best grinder you'll ever use. It's ceramic coated, and that coating helps because the keef doesn't stick, it doesn't clog up, it doesn't grind. It's beautiful. It's green. It's got the Growcast logo right on top. Got sharp blades. It's got a nice keef catcher. I'm holding this thing right now. It is literally the best grinder you'll ever use, and it's sexy. growcastpodcast.com/swagpack, and then check out the custom Wolfman Keep Rollin' tray as well. Super, super cool. Even comes with a glass nug jar, and that you can't beat the price. Cannot beat that swag pack price altogether. And get them before they're gone. growcastpodcast.com/swagpack. All right, everybody, let's get back to Leighton Morrison. Okay, we need to get into some questions that have been submitted, and a lot of them go along with what you just said, so I'm going to fire them at you.
Yeah.
First of all, you mentioned sand. I've been using sand as a top cover. I like to cover my soil from the light. It's great to fight fungus gnats, all of this stuff. Someone said that there could be a possibility of kind of choking out the breathability of the topsoil, and that instead you could use something like rice hulls. What do you think about sand as a top cover?
I think that's an interesting idea. I like it. I mean, I agree with you as far as holding down fungus gnats, because they can't work their way through it. You are adding mineral nutrient to the soil if you've got a good biological component. And eventually that sand's going to work down and provide drainage for you.
Do you think it's kind of choking out the soil in any way by having that? Sometimes it kind of turns into a hard pan, but other times it doesn't.
Yeah, I would say be gentle, like less is more. I definitely wouldn't build it up so high that it did become a hard pan, because then now you're fighting respiration.
Okay.
That's bad. You're going to go anaerobic underneath there.
Okay.
So light layers of top dress, and then once it disappears, do it again and let that sand move down through the profile.
Okay. I like that, dude. That's really great. Someone else asked, speaking of soil horizons, can you build a soil horizon to encourage a bottom feed system to where it's effective to do a bottom feed living soil? And what would that soil build look like?
Okay, so in the horizontal system that I presented, it's basically three horizons. The bottom horizon is called the E, or alluvial horizon, and it's made of rock and sand. It is 1/7 of your overall depth. And basically, that's an aquifer. And you can put a pipe down the side of your bed and water just the horizon and let that water wick back up naturally.
Wow.
I have no issue with that whatsoever, but I still would encourage you to occasionally top dress. Biomimicry is the key to the whole thing. So top water, I meant. So yeah, you could water from the bottom and then periodically have a rain event where you're watering from the top too. So the second horizon is called the A horizon, and that is a mix of sand, silt, clay, and organic matter. And the ratio is 50% sand, 17% clay, 13% silt, and 20% organic matter. So the organic matter in that horizon is basically the same thing that you use on the top, which is called your O horizon. And the A horizon is 2/7 of your overall depth. The O horizon is the other 4/7. So the O horizon is a blend of super soil or soilless medium, whatever you want or whatever you're comfortable using. Basically, it's designed for fast rooting, pore space, so you can have good soil respiration, and of course, allowing microbes to get down in there if you're using teas. Or if you're using nutrients, that's, you know, that's a great nutrient holding profile. So now the way it works is you overwater, that water migrates down into the E horizon and it stays there. And the reason and the importance of the sand is to create what's called a sand filter. And that sand filter will not let fines, organic matter fines, to get down into it so that it goes anaerobic. So again, that's really important when you're building that E horizon, that you put the gravel down and then you wash the sand in so there's zero pore spaces and that becomes one dense aquifer.
Wow.
Okay, so back to O horizon. Again, it can be anything that you want and it's 4/7 of the mix.
Killer, man. So your mix is literally perfect for what he's describing.
Yeah.
And there you go. Who was that who asked that? I lost the member's name, but shout out to the Discord member who asked that one. That's killer, man. That's totally killer. What else do I got? What else do I got here? Sorry, did you have anything else to add to that? I have another question here if you're ready.
Yeah, I'm ready.
So Howitzer, member Howitzer, is asking about, oh man, this goes along with what you were saying about the orchard. This is the exact question that I wanted to ask you. So you take your soil test, let's just say the composition is okay, but you get the actual mineral test, and you said, perfect example, you said it was low on sulfur. Howitzer's wondering, how do you know how much of the organic soil amendments to use to boost them to the proper level and not, you know, overdo it or undershoot it?
Okay, so I didn't go into the testing that I do. There's a lot of different types of tests I do, but in this particular case, I want to have a soil texture test. So I want to know what is the organic matter and what is the percentages of sand, silt, and clay. Mm-hmm. So that's a textural test. Then I do a soil chemistry test, and then I also do a saturated paste test. Now, when I start reading the test, the first thing I do is I look at the texture. What am I up against? And then I look at CEC. Okay, where is that coming from? Is that coming from the organic matter, or is that coming from the clay? Then I look at pH, and then I look at the saturated paste test. All right, saturated paste is critical. It's your calcium to magnesium to potassium ratio. And that ratio should be 75% calcium, 18% magnesium, and 7% potassium. That's ideal. Huh. If I see that, I know I'm off to the races. Now it's a matter of just trace minerals. What do I got?
Okay.
And after I look at trace minerals, then I look at the soil chemistry test. So the soil chemistry is actually like the last part or piece of the puzzle.
Whoa.
If everything else in relationship, then I know, okay, I got to just add this and I'm golden. I'm off to the races. Then it's about nutrition. So nutrition is a whole nother ball of wax. And that's based on plant. And that's based on what you're doing. If you're growing fruit and you want to push that tree, which most people do because it's all about production.
Yeah.
Or if you're growing cannabis, same thing. It's all about production. You want the flower. You don't want stretchy, stocky, sticky plants. So that's where it comes back to, all right, let's look at our NPK, let's watch our plant and let the plant talk to us. So NPK is like the last piece of the puzzle. And to be honest with you, I'm looking at a lot of these amino acid digests, so other forms of nitrogen that are, again, quick uptake, easy to digest, can't kill or burn the plant with them if you overdo it a little bit. And I'm finding some amazing new products on the market. I mean, it's a great time to be alive.
You got to fill us in.
Yeah, I can't speak on all of them because I'm just starting to play with them.
Okay.
And I don't remember the names of them. Because I'm just getting hit from so many sides right now. It's like, fuck, as long as I know it's on the shelf and the guys need it for fertigation, they have it. And then I'm paying attention to what the plant reaction is.
Right.
So this one product that's a calcium-based amino has showed great results in 2 weeks, which is really rare. Usually you won't see plant reaction for on trees these big for, you know, 3 to 4 months, which goes back to this orchard. You know, after I got all of those pieces of the puzzle in play, I told the landscape architect, I go, look, it's going to be 3 to 4 months. That's common with trees these size. And we saw a plant reaction in 1 month. And I mean, explosive growth, like leaves that are 12 to 18 inches long. The ranch manager on this project has been ranch managing for his life. And since he was a little boy working under his grandfather, he said he's never seen avocado leaves that big and that long.
Damn, man.
So obviously we're doing shit right, right?
I fucking love it. I absolutely love it.
And here's a better one, right? So you put on your seatbelt. I promised the landscape architect a good sized reduction in water. I finally got to do the first preliminary water audit yesterday. And we were putting 144 gallons per tree per week. And we are now at 66.8 gallons per tree per week. That's more than a 50% savings.
Holy shit.
And I believe we can push it a little bit further. And this is California, and the droughts are fucking real. So a lot of people's heads spun when they've heard that. And so pit moss, coir, compost, all water holding capacity. Again, the chips over the top prevent that from evaporating. So it's that system that's working. It's not just the compost extract, just the mycorrhizae. You know, it's a system. Wow. And the same thing can be repeated. You know, you can use hay, you can use green mulches, you know, in your cannabis plants. And all of these things should be done because you, in essence, create these microclimates just at the soil surface or just underneath the chips, which are ideal to housing and getting these organisms to multiply and expand rapidly.
Damn, man, this is all mind-blowing stuff. I want to finish where we were, but I'm going to ask you this question next.
Yeah, go for it.
Water conservation. What are, I mean, you kind of mentioned about the specific formulation of your mix, but what are the keys to water conservation in a living soil setup? Like, what are the biggest game changers, the key players in water conservation?
So any kind of organic matter that stores moisture. Coir is wonderful. It has this hollow tube. It soaks it in and it holds it. Pit moss, same thing. It just holds water like I've never seen in my life. And compost too. I mean, if you have the light, fluffy compost, that's ideal. If it's like a heavy, greasy, wet compost, then I would cut it with a pit moss or a coir.
Whoa.
Or, you know, a ground up organic matter. Like one of the ingredients that we used was basically just a shredded tree. So it was kind of like stringy. So it kind of has pore space to allow some of the other little fines to get in there and get trapped and also become little water storage containers. So again, you know, I look at the water storage in a decent aggregated soil as a giant reservoir. So when you have all these organisms in play, they can mine water vapor. So you got to start getting your head down to scale. And you realize how important aggregation is. Aggregation is when all these particles come together and get bonded with glues from the biology, whether it's glomulin from the fungi or whether it's biofilm from the bacteria. But as those aggregates get bigger and bigger and bigger, which they do because of the biology, now that aggregate is just another storage unit. It's just another whole little, you know, ball of moisture. So again, looking forward in geological time, what is the quickest and best way to grow aggregates? And that is through the use of a compost extract and then having the right components that are very easy for this biology to break down, mine, build biofilm, build biomass, and then create these aggregates. And I've been, you know, in some of my earlier work on engineered soil systems, I got called in on this project because it was like less than 1% organic matter. It would only grow weeds. They could not get fungi to take hold. They could not get protozoa to take hold. So I made a biological mayonnaise. So basically my product triple washed and then I sprayed it on the soil. And within 2 weeks, we had, you know, a 6 to 8 inch layer of this, you know, beginnings of aggregates. And so now the fungi could take hold. The protozoa could take hold. The grasses were coming back. It wasn't spotty and weedy. So, you know, these are the kinds of processes that you can quickly turn dirt or, you know, sand into soil.
Nuts, man. On the same note of water conservation, I know you work in aquaponics. A member had posted the question, why do aquaponics save so much water? What is it about that system that, like, doesn't it reduce water usage by up to like 80%? Or correct me if I'm
wrong. Even a little bit more in some cases. So basically you've created a recirculating system. So the water never leaves your system. It's just clean and put back into play. So the fish poop, the plants take up the poop, you gas it off, you know, get up good gas exchange, you know, bubble it, make sure the DO is high enough. And then you return it back to the fish. So it's a closed loop system. That's why aquaponics is going to be the future as rivers dry up and reservoirs dry up, because how else are you going to produce fish?
That's wild, man.
Or how else are you going to produce food, you know, protein and veggies?
So it's nothing's lost to evaporation.
That's why it's 80%, because yes, you are going to be losing some to evaporation, especially if you're outside.
Okay. So there is, I'm sure there's less than if you're watering into the soil is what I'm saying.
Oh God. Yes. Everything is transferring down into the groundwater, right, you're watering soil. So that's why aquaponics is so efficient with water use.
It just holds it all.
Yep.
Okay. I love it. But now we're circling back.
Okay.
Going back to the question about the natural inputs and how much to use. When you applied sulfur large scale to that orchard, what input did you use and how did you dose it?
So I used an organic elemental sulfur. It's an ag product. And so basically you calculate out how many square feet or how many pounds per square feet you need.
Ah, I see.
I would recommend that you ask for recommendations so that you don't have to try to calculate this.
Right.
It's a bitch. It's taken me years to try to do this. And I often will ask for those recommendations to check my work because I don't want to rely just on myself.
Right.
So in this case, the recommendations came back, I think it was 20 pounds per 1,000 square feet, which was close to what I calculated. So then I basically took the circumference of the tree with taking into consideration the drip line. So the drip line is at the edge of where the green leaves would drop the rain. And I go just outside of that drip ring by 6 inches to a foot. And then now I look at the radius of that. In most cases, it was about 104 inches. So a little over 8 feet. So then I divide 8 feet, you know, pi r squared, how many square feet it is. Then I weighed out the sulfur and measured it in a cup and put a line on it. And then I walk around to each tree, scoop the however much it was that came to that line, and then sprinkle that around the base of the tree.
Jeez.
I didn't treat the whole field. I don't need to treat the whole field. And more importantly, I don't want to encourage extra plants growing up all over the place that need to be maintained. So bottom line is, yes, I did do pollinator gardens. I did banker plants. I did trap plants. I did all kinds of additional planting to support the ecosystem. See, that was the other problem with monoculture is when you're monoculturing, and especially if you have unhealthy trees, you're going to bring in every pest from the area, but you're not going to bring in the predators. So the key to doing a restoration like this is to build in at least, well, I like to go 10%. You can go as small as 1%, but really the bigger, the more, the better. Bringing in these indigenous predators to keep the pest pressure at bay. I mean, you're always going to have pest pressure, and that's fine. That's the way nature works.
Right.
But you don't want it to get out of whack. If it runs away on you, like it did on the lemons, you got all kinds of problems.
So you need to intersperse that crop with homes for these predators.
Right. So what I did was flower rings, and then I did grass strips, every other row of avocados, 4 feet wide, so the guys could drive over the top of them without running over them. And just, you know, seeded it with hay and put some jute over the top of it just to hold everything in play until it sprouted. And so now we've got most of it's come up. It's a little bit slow because, you know, we were going gangbusters trying to build a team to do this, you know, because I need to use the same employees, because once I finish training them on how to do this and how to blend the soils back together again, I don't want to be teaching the guys every day.
Right.
So it took me about a month and a half to build this team. And we did the avocados, which was about 2 acres. in about a month and a half, 2 months. We did the lemons in about 2.5 weeks, and equal or a little bit bigger. Jeez. I think it's actually more like 3 acres.
Wow.
But again, it's that's the process. Is the hard part is you have to build a team with these guys so that each person knows whose responsibility it is to do this and whose responsibility it is to do that. You know, I teach every one of them each phase of it so that they're all cross-trained. So if we need more guys on raking or more guys distributing compost, we can keep pace with it all. So that's part of the goal when you get on scale is to build a team.
It's crazy.
And
stuff,
have
man.
The team members. Yeah. And have the team members, you know, make them part of the team. Don't just yell at them and tell them what to do. Teach them, make them understand why they're doing this stuff. And then they put their heart and soul into it. And man, once they get going, I was having a hell of a time just keeping up with them.
Man, this is really fascinating. I like, here's the thing. Here's what kind of concerns me. Is there so few guys out there like you, and they seem to be just doing it for the passion, which is great, but there's just not enough folks. So what I'm saying is, from your perspective, because you're boots on the ground, you're out there doing this regenerative transformation that everybody else just kind of talks about, people like me just kind of talk about. So my question to you is, what should we be doing better as a society? I mean, what could the government be doing better? I take a look at some good examples down in South America, the way they treat their coffee farmers and the certifications. If you do the multi-cropping, polycropping, as you said, you can get a rainforest certification and then you can charge more for your beans. And that kind of makes the whole cycle go round. Is there any incentivizing going on? Should we be incentivizing? How should society in your eyes, and like I said, the government, I feel like, be aiding this type of work?
Unfortunately, the government sold us out. Whether we ever get a hold of it again, I don't know.
Oh, man.
You know, that's the bad news. The good news is Biden has been talking a lot about green jobs, green job training. There is grant money floating around. A friend of mine, Eric, he and I started the first annual Ventura Compost Cup, Ventura County Compost Cup, which was great. We had 50 samples. We had
that's awesome.
Of the heavy hitters from the area that make compost. We had Ariana from Rodale come over,
compost cup.
We basically had stations, and each judge went to each station. I think we had 10 judges. Again, all heavy hitters around here, and it was to bring awareness to compost and what it is. And the coolest thing that came out of this was the understanding of how these 10 people viewed compost. And at the end of it, I was basically like, you know, I showed them my sample at the end. I didn't show them in the beginning. I said, look at this. You guys would have thrown this sample out. And they looked at me and I'm like, you guys were judging based on beauty, on texture. You weren't judging on the quality of the nutrients in it, because we didn't have time to test or a budget to test each sample, nor did you take into consideration the soil biology. And I go, you look at my shit and you'd be like, oh, that's junk. But this is so biologically powerful, it doesn't even compare to all your other ones. All your other ones aren't going to function without the biology on it. Hmm. So it was really eye-opening for both them and for me as to how people really look at stuff.
That's really cool.
So we had everything from commercial green waste compost to anaerobic nastiness to biodynamic compost to super screen, super fines. You know, everything across the board. And it was really cool to see what each judge picked as, in his or her mind, the winner. So it was an amazing event. And as a result, we are now basically the compost council for Ventura County and the area and the surrounding counties.
The compost council. I mean, that's hilarious. I love it.
Yeah, it's real. And you know, everybody's really excited about doing this again next year.
Well, that's exactly what I'm talking about. I think that, I mean, listen, I don't like to get political on this show for a reason, but we talk about all these ways that we could be, you know, doing better for the environment. But in reality, I feel like there's just a core group of people, you know, we all know them, right? From the KNF Chris Trump guys to your Jeff Lowenfels to your Leighton Morrison. We all know these guys. It's like, we just need to get this information out there. Mm-hmm. So
that's
so,
your job, bro. That's
I appreciate
job,
that,
man.
That makes me feel good because I do try to do my little part here, but I just feel we could do in a better job.
Yeah, we all have a piece of the puzzle,
right?
And
thank you.
If you just grab your piece and run with it as hard as you can, you're doing your part, man. And it's just up to everybody else to find out what their part is and then push on it.
That's a beautiful message, man. That's absolutely powerful, what you just said there. I do appreciate that. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is we teach our kids all sorts of stuff in school. Can't we just teach them a little bit of this sort of thing? But anyway.
Oh, dude. I could go on a rant about
just a little bit. Anyways, we can save that for another time.
Yeah, and I'll tell you that, you know, the dividing and conquering has got to stop. I don't care what color you are. I don't care what size you are. I don't care what shape you are.
I don't care what style farming you do or if you do LEDs or HIDs.
We're all sisters. Yeah. We're all brothers and sisters. And we got to stop the fucking hate.
I agree.
Stop allowing organizations to drive us away from each other.
Divide us.
We got to stop. You know, one of my dearest and most respected spiritual leaders told me something a few years back that stuck like, oh man, I still talk about it. And he said to me, you know, to state or decide this is right, you've by default called everything else wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And think about that for a minute. For me to say my way of doing this is right, I'm saying everybody else's way of doing it is wrong.
Right.
That's wrong. And vice versa. You know, oh, this is bad. I'm declaring that that's bad. Well, then I'm declaring everything else is right. So it's, you know, it's one of those things. It's a mindset that we need as a species to get our heads wrapped around. There's a million ways to do things, and there's a million ways to do them right, just as ways there are a million ways to do them wrong. So, you know, again, you don't want to judge. You want to stay open-minded. You want to be the best listener. Don't be the one that's always talking over everybody. You never learn anything that way. Just listen, and maybe something that they say or do will fit into your regiment or your mm-hmm. protocol or your belief system. But if you don't listen and you don't take things into consideration and remain open-minded, then you're a problem. You're not part of the solution.
It's the dichotomous nature of man.
Yeah.
We tend to dissect things. Zero, one. It's, yes, no.
Yeah, it's
on,
reductionism.
Off. And yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's, I feel like that's kind of something that we're hopefully evolving out of and evolving away from. But that's exactly right, man. That's some powerful stuff. I think we could vibe on that. And a lot of these lessons, you know, they apply to life like you're presenting them, but you see them in nature and gardening. Like all of the things you just said apply to cultivation.
Yeah.
Which I think that's one of the reasons why it's so incredible to learn about cultivation and botany.
Yeah, one of the things we talk a lot about is spirituality. Mm. And right now the human race is very small spirited. In other words, they don't carry a lot of the love, the respect, the observation that's necessary to start to vibrate at a higher level. And that's critical. I mean, we talk about like you go into a grow and everybody's happy and there's music playing and the plants are just killing it. And then you go into these other grows where, you know, everybody's like worried about getting fired or trying to show off or trying to, you know, sneak around and you know, stab other people in the back, and the grow is destroyed. It's a horrible scene, you know, and human spirituality will directly connect to the plants as they will give back to you if you open your eyes and mind to this stuff.
Man, I love that.
Yeah, the plant health is directly related to your spirituality, to your happiness, to your intentions. And I've seen it over and over and over again in my life. You know, how that comes through and shows itself in other ways if you can stay in a higher vibration and not get sucked into the negativity and the gossip and all those other things that are not beneficial.
I love it, man. I think we could kick it for sure. I think we could. Yeah, I think we would do just fine. Really, really cool stuff. We are, oh God, we're close to the top of the hour here.
Already?
Yeah, I know, right? I love talking to you, man. Seriously, you are welcome back anytime. It's always a pleasure. Swinging it around a little bit, I have to bring this up. This was literally one of the first things on the list that we got to get to. You posted an RO remineralization recipe that freaking saved my grow. I've been struggling with this RO. I think a lot of people go to RO and home grows too quickly,
Yes.
But my Algonquin tap water is straight poison. And I had to go to RO, and the remineralization process, it's been totally eye-opening to me. I didn't know that plain stripped water was such a solvent and caused all of these crazy reactions in the soil. And I just couldn't quite get a mix right until you posted on your Instagram, Kingdom Aquaponics LLC, a very specific mix with like four ingredients, and it has everything you need from chlorine to the calcium, magnesium, and all of that. So I don't know. I just had to shout you out for that and then ask you like why you posted that and what, you know, just kind of get this, the story behind that mix.
So yeah, I've been, you know, working in and around RO for years. I mean, years since it really first came out on a commercial scale. So I had a really good understanding of, well, I had a good understanding of water before I started playing around with RO and understanding that water is nature's solvent.
Right.
It literally is in charge of not only providing life, but breaking things down and providing mineral rich environments for aquatic ecosystems. So the ecosystems wouldn't be there if water didn't break down mineral and suspend it in its matrix. I mean, if you look at salt water, you know, people go, oh, it's salt water, you can't use it. It's amniotic fluid, man. It is so full of minerals and trace minerals and nutrients. It's not funny. That's why the oceans, before we fucked them up, were just incredibly fertile.
Right.
I mean, literally the stories of Cape Cod, you know, back during the Pilgrims ages and even before with, you know, the Indians, you know, verbal talk of like walking across the fish, walking across the striped bass during their runs.
Whoa.
And I've seen in my lifetime, you know, from literally crabs and lobsters and fish running all over the place to now you go out to, you know, the places I used to hang out in Maine, and it's horrifying. There's hardly any life left. So, you know, that's the reason why my understanding of, you know, water is so important to me and passionate. And I kept getting hit up from people going, you know, I have a problem. My plants just aren't doing well. And I'm like, what? Let me guess, you're using RO.
Right.
Most times it's like, yeah, how did you know? And I'm like, because you made a friggin' acid. You made the strongest, most powerful acid on the planet.
Yeah.
It will eat anything.
Yeah.
And so it's just going to pull minerals right out of suspension and choke your plant and choke your biology. So anyway, you know, I worked with a chemist to try to figure out what a good relationship was. My recipe wasn't as good as this one. And when I saw this one, I was like, bam, that guy's got it all covered. And I forget where I found it.
Oh, I gotta see that.
They found me.
Yours finally fixed my garden. I was having that exact same issue. Like I said, just random nutrient deficiency after random nutrient deficiency. And I thought, yeah, I was doing a good enough job. Some people said try using CalMag. Some people said try using potassium bicarbonate. But I never saw a multi-part mix as comprehensive as yours. And now my plants are lush green, my friend.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know, that's why I put it up, is because, yeah, I got hit up a lot over the years. And I finally just like, instead of answer each person individual, just put it up there. So that anybody that says that uses RO goes, oh my God, that's my problem. You know, and then they don't even have to hit me up. A lot of people probably didn't even know that I knew this shit.
That's I was surprised to see you do it because, yeah, like I said, it's an aquaponics page. And I'm like, who posted that? It's like, shit, that was Leighton Morrison. But we all understand, you know, like you said, the solvent capabilities, the cation exchange and all that. What about the biology? I hear this just really quickly here, because I know we do got to let you go. I hear that because of the way RO is, it's also more susceptible to bad pathogens and things like that. Is that true?
Oh, it's a breeding ground. It's the perfect environment to grow anything.
Just because it's blank.
Yeah, it's a blank slate. It's a white canvas. You can do anything with it. So, you know, I don't want to use the word biological weapon, but it's a petri dish,
oh,
right?
Sure.
It's,
okay.
Whatever you introduce to it, it's going to bloom.
Whoa, man. Okay. That is super fascinating. So many things going through my mind here. Listen, we're past it here. Leighton Morrison, thank you so much for your appearances and on both shows and dropping all this knowledge, man. We appreciate you so much here at GrowCast. Seriously.
Well, thank you. That's, you know, that's, that makes me feel good. And that's why I do this. It's soul food. And I'm just trying to boost the vibration of everybody I possibly can and encourage them to do the right things with their life. And, you know, put your money where your belief system is. Look into the products you buy and don't buy them if they don't align. And I think that's, you know, really kind of the only way we're going to change the future.
Yes.
Is by, you know, not supporting companies that are not supporting humans, you know, human rights, and not abusing the system of you know, poor workers and keeping them poor and slavery, or polluting the earth
right.
to make money.
Harming the environment.
You know, so that's kind of why I do this. And that's what I'm all about.
Very, very eye-opening exploration today. Everybody follow him at Kingdom Aquaponics LLC, Future Cannabis Project, live on YouTube on Thursdays, I believe, yes?
Yep.
Check it out, everybody.
10 a.m. PST, Pacific Standard Time.
There you go, everyone. We'll have you back, of course. Much love to Leighton. This is Jordan River and Leighton Morrison. We're signing off. We're saying be safe out there, everybody. We'll see you next time on GrowCast. And grow smarter. That's our show for today, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in. Before we wrap it up, going to give some love to Rimrock Analytical. Sex testing, soil testing, and more. Hey, we were just talking about soil testing. Go to rimrockanalytical.com. Use code GROWCAST for free shipping on your tests. Save some bucks. And Rimrock is cool because they even send prepaid shipping labels back. So it's really easy to do your test collection, pack it up, tape it up, tape that shipping label on, and drop it in a post office box. It is really, ease is the name of the game with Rimrock. I use their sex testing. The collection process is so easy. You just drop a little sample into a vial, bing, bang, boom, drop it in the box, and they respond very, very quickly with their sex testing results. I'm waiting on my peach typhoon tests. Ooh, that's exciting. RimrockAnalytical.com, code GROWCAST for free shipping. Thank you to Rimrock. Thank you to you listeners. Thank you to you members. I appreciate all you guys so much. Stay tuned. We're in Sacramento. Like I said, go to growcastpodcast.com/Sacramento. If you're in the NorCal area, come and hang out. Come and visit. And we'll also be in Redding after that as well. All right, everyone. I'll see you next time on GrowCast. I guess that's all for now. Bye-bye.